This is an interview conducted at the Final Exam, a private club in Denton, Texas. This interview was conducted on April 27th, 1976. The interview was conducted for the Emily Fowler Public Library by Alec Williams. Well, I need your name. It's Tim
McCullough.
Tim McCullough?
Originally from Galveston. I've been in Denton probably 8 years, 8, 9 years. At the most.
Okay.
I was a student here to start out with.
And you're?
Bob Melville.
Bob Melville? Originally from Galveston. Okay. I'll just start by making an observation of my own. I've noticed that your club is very well run. It's one reason why I've been a regular customer. There's no hassle. You don't have to worry about some guy coming in and taking a punch at you. And it's very quiet. No trouble.
That was the main idea where it started out was it was for students, like I say, students and faculty. And the idea was to keep it quiet. That's the way it's mainly been run since it started in 71.
It started in 1971?
November of 71.
Who started?
I believe it was a combination of people. Bill Fitz was the main person, I believe, but there were several involved. Some of the professors from the university were involved in it, John Miller and Ron Fink. Bob Popplewell, which was a professor there too, and several other people were involved in it. But it was kind of a new thing for Denton. It was one of the first in Denton that was strictly on, pretty close to the campus, on campus.
I noticed too that this is one place you can walk into, and well, I'm dressed in a suit because I'm on business right now. But well, like you've got on a t-shirt, he's got on a t-shirt, you've got a nice sports shirt, but nobody's really fancy dressed up. And I can always gather that it's not quite that kind of a bar.
Well, it's casual. You can come any way you want.
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't have to dress up some certain way. It's just a place you come to.
Right. That sort of goes along the atmosphere of the whole place.
Well, since I hate to get fancy dressed up to go somewhere, one person who appreciates it. I'm sure everyone who listens to this tape is going to hear that sound of the hinges and glasses.
Rattling of the glass.
You might say also that you all keep your mugs frosted in the deep freeze.
Right, frozen. Makes it quite nice in the summertime.
I've noticed many, many times. What are the main problems of running a private club?
Well, just there's a lot of them. Numerous of them. I'm not sure that I can think of them all right now, but 90% of them just keeping the crowds in hand and making sure the membership, you know, the people that are coming in here are members, and you don't have just people walking in and out of the street because it's against the law. You got to be a member. That's 90% of the problem.
I guess. If someone listens to this tape in 10 or 15 years, this place may be completely wet and they may have forgotten.
Yeah, it wasn't always so.
That this is technically a private club, which means, well, what you said, I guess.
You have to be a member to be involved. Now that it is wet, I'm not sure that's going to affect it one way or the other. It could help it, it could hurt it. I'm not sure if it's private. If I continue to stay private, which I think I will, I can limit the people that I want in here. You can almost pick and choose. You know, you have a membership committee that you have to go and approve the membership.
Yeah, I remember coming in here spring of 75, very early spring, and I had to fill out a form like everybody else. I think DH took my name and my check, and I had to wait.
There's never been any class consciousness on membership. In other words, you know, there's been every type of ethnic group in Denton has been represented in the Final Exam. The only criterion, the major criterion for membership is the person's behavior. And as long as they maintain the rules of the club, the members are always welcome.
I need to get your full name, Paul Bronte.
Scott Kenyon.
Scott Kenyon, where are you from?
More or less from Denver for the last 12 years, but my background's from Galveston, Texas.
And we've got three people here from Galveston, Texas. Is there any significance? Yeah.
Four people.
Dr. Perlman.
I don't
care
about money.
Well, there's a lot
of
people.
Do you have any objection to being represented on the tape?
By what? What is this?
For the library.
For the library?
History
for the
of the final exam.
Is that right?
Right.
No, I don't have anything against it, I don't suppose.
You're a doctor.
If that's on the up and up.
Yes. Quite legal and legit.
Okay.
Your name is Dr. Perlman. Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Galveston.
Four Galvestonians.
Well, we kind of moved.
They only let the Galvestonians in the kitchen at the final exam.
I'm kind of snuck in.
Yeah. Passport, I guess.
I guess you can say that Moscati was like one of the first bartenders here. That was a real bartender. There wasn't much of anybody. No one really knew how to mix a drink. Scotty was one of the first, and he kind of got the bar together. You know. Before that, it was just like a corner beer store, is what it was. We kind of switched into mixed drinks, and he's done a fairly good job. No longer works here.
No, because all the new help's a lot better than I.
Sometimes you have to ask him to speak up. This is all on tape. Are you going to edit this tape?
Somewhat by request.
I see.
Which would mean...
Can we curse and shit? No.
Well, keep it to a minimum. I don't want to infringe on your right of conversation. But,
okay.
You know,
I didn't know. That's why I asked.
I'm not going to flip dirty words, but... make a better tape. Yeah, this is not for vanity food.
I understand. Okay, I didn't. Yeah, that's why I asked.
This is up and up.
What? See, I told you he's king of low talkers.
That's why I'm low talking.
We may be in for a shock when you see this in writing, but I'm very interested in young business people, and does a young businessman have more problems than an older businessman?
I really don't know that many more older businessmen. I know that they have a lot of the same problems. I'm sure most of the people that run private clubs in Denton, I think 90% of them are younger, or the younger people now. But the first places that started out in Denton were like most of them had like the motels and hotels, and then the Denton Country Club. Which in Denton had their own, they had their own clubs for their own people, but not really for the students at large and stuff like that.
Matter of fact, in the early days in North Texas, right before we got private clubs for the students, a student really couldn't go out and have a drink in a few private clubs that there were. The motels had them, and they had strict dress codes. They put the young people through all kinds of changes, trying to keep them out. In other words, they're keeping the clubs very exclusive to local business people and older clientele, not college people. And this club established at first roots, you know, in the campus club business. Now imagine there's six or eight clubs located in the campus business, and they probably generate something like $250,000 worth of business a year between the campus clubs all put together.
Don't you think you get an older crowd here?
I get an older crowd. It's not all young. Like since I turned 18, it didn't switch over to just all young people. It maintains its balance of I'd say the average age is somewhere between 21 and 30, 35 maybe.
Well, get older people too.
I get older. Yeah, got a lot of. I've got definitely
people coming in. Probably has the best cross section.
You can call this a social yardstick. In fact,
we've got not only students, we've got of just regular Denton people coming in here, painters, carpenters, laborers, policemen, whatever. We have no restrictions except for, like we were saying earlier, about rowdiness and stuff like that. It's your behavior that more or less controls whether you're going to be a member here or not. Student faculty club, and you almost had to show your ID card, your student ID card, as either a faculty or a student to become a member.
And they've always had the prettiest girls in town.
As waitresses.
The waitresses.
Yeah. It's that I've noticed too, Paul.
That's right.
And the good girls, and most of them make the dean's list. That's a fact.
That's true. That's
except
true.
One.
That you have everything from beer to an impressive array of bottles there behind the bar. So you serve every type of alcoholic beverage, or just about every type?
Well, liquor, beer, and wine. Our wine selection is limited to a lower price than the half gallons, which is not really that much sold, but I would like to get into a better wine selection and sell it by the bottle price. As of yet, I haven't done it.
As far as the preparation
we
of liquor,
probably the most complete bar stock of any bar encounter, from what I've seen.
For liquor and beer.
You can get, and the healthcare makes probably the greatest variety of drinks.
Yeah, you can get drinks.
Healthcare can work in New York City.
Anywhere else in town.
I would say beer can. Experience in grappling.
We have one where a little baby screams out at the top of his lungs and he's listening to it on earphones. But I'm interested in businesses, what they sell, and who they serve, and their problems in serving. We've gotten Tim in on this. Do either of you know what are there problems that Tim hasn't covered? Are there multitudes of problems?
I'll make a comment about something you said a while ago about the younger businessman, the older businessman, and whether or not there was a discrepancy who had the most trouble. I would think that, this is just off the top of my head, but I had thought about that, wouldn't really, trouble wouldn't correlate with the age of the businessman necessarily, but kind of his training and kind of common sense things that he's learned from growing up and this kind of thing. So you probably find, like you mentioned, that Tim didn't mention that there are that many problems. Well, he's a pretty level-headed fella, has a pretty good feel for business, you know. So, and there's probably some older guys that are the same way, and then there's probably some younger guys that don't have a very good feel for business at all, and there's probably some older guys that don't have a very good feel for it all. They have a lot of problems. So I think it's more individual kind of thing, rather than, I guess a certain amount would come with experience in that.
Sometimes you can create your own problems. If you get too far into it and let it get to you, then you create your own problems.
In food and beverage services by themselves, in any city, country, any place in the world, is probably the toughest business to keep running consistently and consistently make money. It's, especially restaurants, you know, 3 out of 4 restaurants are open this year, will not be open next year, the same manager. And bars are much the same way. The management shifts over a lot because it's very demanding every day. Constantly, it's like running a hospital or an army. And whereas if you have regular retail outlet stores, things are more structured, well-structured. It's usually a 5-day week that stops at 5 in the afternoon. You're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, getting feedback from other businessmen. And in this business, you don't. It's almost like the classic American capitalistic adventure. You know, you're out here and you're going to do what you can do. And the better you do it, the longer you survive and the longer you make. And I think this club's made a compromise with money and has maintained its survival very consistently. They probably make less money than they could make in this club, but they probably have a lot happier clientele. So businessmen might say, well, there's some things done here that aren't quite right, as far as he's concerned, thinking in terms of the bottom line. But when you're dealing with the public service and food and beverage, you know, there's a little joy in what you do besides just a product.
The idea here was the service to the people too, anyway. We try to keep lower prices here than most places, not just to outdo them, just so people can afford them. Because around town, if you go somewhere else, I believe the prices are considerably a lot higher.
I've noticed that. I think it's interesting that you're getting a service which is not exclusive in the sense of snob appeal or price, that has only that one basic restriction, behavior, and tries to reach as broad a clientele as possible. Because I should have you say your full name, D.H., and where you're from, so I can spot it on the tape.
My full name. Donald Hyatt Shreve, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I knew you were from Oklahoma, but I do not where.
Well, born there. Grew up in a car.
Yeah, we met when we were 3 years old in a rest area somewhere near Virginia.
D.H. is a bartender here. He's been here for quite a while, too. He started out being the doorman.
He started out actually
worked his way down.
Right. He started out becoming he was going to become an English professor, but instead he decided to be a doorman of a club.
Well, he may write some very interesting novels someday based on all this, you never know.
I think he already
Wait till my thesis gets bound.
Mm-hmm. I've been waiting.
Then you'll be looking in the mirror.
Then they'll put it in the cellar of the library.
But nobody will understand it because nobody can read all of it.
Let it be true.
No one can read.
What? Were you in the original starting group on this team?
No, I wasn't. I like to say it was Bill Fitz and a couple of professors and several other people, but I wasn't involved in it. Scotty can probably tell you more about that. He was around when the place first, when they were first building. So it was Dick. Dick Pierce was the first bartender here.
First bar manager.
Night manager.
Well, Dick Pierce, would you like to say what would people have to go through to start a private club, and what did they when this club was started?
Well, this club started about 8 years ago. I met the man that got it open. I didn't have to do it. It took a very minimal amount of money. It was a lot of work. The man had just done a lot of talking and convincing people to admit that over there. So,
they sort of set the guidelines back in those days. Like, we're open now, and town since we've opened, they've made zoning ordinances that you have to have a specific use permit for the place. Like we're operating now, since we opened before they made the ordinance, we don't have a specific use permit, but most of the other clubs that are open now do. They have to have one.
By a specific use permit, state exactly what they're going to do.
I believe that's mainly what it is, and you have to have a legal parking. I think it's one spot for every four members.
It's one for every table.
Well, what it means, what the specific use permit means is designating what type of zoning the building should be classified under. At the time this club was open, it wasn't classified under any real zoning at all.
Because they didn't have it.
Because there weren't any legislation in it. Now, it was easier in that aspect, because there weren't as many rules as far as getting your license, but the thing that made it so hard is that nobody in the town political structure wanted to see anybody get a license near campus or any student get a license. And that's what took them quite a bit of time and a lot of political movement, and that's why Dickens.
They spent a year getting their license.
And 90% of it was talking to different people. And after they broke the ice, two or three other people got in real quick, opened up clubs. And this was just Ruby's first. Oh, and then the Main Green Inn.
Ruby's and the Main Green Inn.
And after that, they started coming out to town, held some meetings and passed legislation on exactly what the Pacific use would be for a bar. And nowadays it's tough to find a location. Like if you're within, what is it, 500-600 feet of the church, you can't have a private
three,
club.
300.
You have to have so many parking spaces. There are limits to capacity, how many people are allowed to be in the building, all kinds of things that this club doesn't actually come under. In a way, it's easier to get your license once you find the location. Before, you could have all locations in the world, and there weren't rules against them, but because of political pressure, it was very tough to get a license. Many people tried before Bill Fitz and his group initiated this club.
How did they hold out so long? Have they held out for a year waiting for a license? Seemed like that.
Go ahead. When you go down to change your license, man, they stack paperwork up like that all that time.
Besides that, the bureaucratic cycle is sending 15 agencies.
Red tape and getting this place set up itself.
I believe they lived here.
Find someone who's willing to.
They lived here before.
Just put up with it for a certain amount of time. Conform to their regulations and rules, and then they can't deny you. It's like an endurance test.
Exactly.
And if you can make it, if you can prove that you're willing to put up with all this, then apparently they figured you.
Well, they run out of regulations. That's what it is.
They're going to come down on you after you got it opened up.
And originally, I think the way that Bill Fitz did get in the doors was by saying that it is going to be a student faculty club. It's going to be serving the university. So somehow, I think you got to do all that.
What is, I mean, legally, he had the right to get the license the whole time. They should have given it to him a week after he applied for it. But what they did is they put him through stall options. In other words, they told him, okay, you go do this, and that would just stall him, and he'd have to come back and say, well, I did that. Well, now it's time to go do this. And they were ridiculous changes. They were bureaucratic moves, delay. Most people have probably tried to open clubs and give up after 2 or 3 months, you know, because you got a high anxiety level.
In the meantime, he was trying to raise money and get the place in shape.
Plus,
it was a long shot.
They lived here in this house before it was before it ever became a private club, and the thought was going on in their mind for probably 2 years before they even started really initiating to get the license and everything. But they were, at the meantime, they were still living here in the house. It was split up into 4 or 5 bedrooms, and there was 4 or 5 guys living there. One of them had the idea, why don't you just open up a private club one day? And I guess the thought ran through their minds a couple of years before they ever even just actually started the process.
And this club was literally built by people that had a labor of love, because there wasn't a lot of money passed around for all the walls that were knocked down, shingles put up, and it was day to day, and it's still going on. This is a living organism. It's not a building, I can tell you that. Unless, can you see that patio out there through the back window of the kitchen? They used to be open with a dirt floor, and they moved tables out there, and they built a fence around it, hung some lights through the tree, like a little Chinese garden, it was fine. Next year, they put down a slab of concrete, put tables on that, and now you notice it's all enclosed in, because we're up framed in, and they didn't cut down a tree. They left a hole in the roof for the tree, and then they put up, the following year, they put up a little sheetrock on the inside, expanded another room out back.
Now we're trying to make it back to the patio, in the open air.
It started out with that one room in the front, really, and then slowly but surely we got what they used to call the old foosball room together, which was somebody's master bedroom at one time. Now they got tables and chairs in there, they got a piano. And then this other little back room was a storage area.
It was Uncle Denny's bedroom.
That was Uncle Denny's bedroom. And now they got, you know, a little game in there you can play.
It's strange.
Every year there's a little change.
Every year there's something new, there's something old. Like we've had, as a matter of fact, I think we had one of the better restaurants here in town.
Yeah, without
one time we had we had the best food here in town, and I think a couple of restaurants.
I haven't seen it either.
It might be a nice menu with stuff that didn't it.
And shrimp scampi, chicken cuisine, hand stuffed
manicotti, which
emphasized hand stuffed. It was prepared just in the old Italian recipes, like ladies have been doing for hundreds of years.
When the place first opens up, there were a couple of guys in Galveston to go to the kitchen, and they were like running down to Galveston, so
they had shrimp,
fresh shrimp and crab.
And,
When we used to sell that for 75 cents for half a pound.
$0.65
a pound.
That's
what it was.
You peeled your own grass and you peel your own mushroom.
Four variations of chilies that could all be entered in the contest, I swear. There was some good chili cooks at this place. The chef from New York was very, he'd been a known chef. If he'd opened up a place in Dallas, he'd be known to this day. And he did it right here. We charged the highest thing on the menu was $2.75. It should have been about $6. The college kids were screaming about the price, but there was always a little scrap left on the plate. The plates were
never
top quality, and there's just not enough money here to generate business. Food was above clientele.
At that time, since then, there's been several restaurants that have started out with almost the same menu that we had it back in the day.
Well, I'll name the one because it's going to be famous in history for dinner. That's Ruger.
Right.
Ruger really? People came down and copied the menu right out there in that back room on a round table, copied it down, took some paper, and asked questions with all the kitchen help. And as we all know nowadays, Ruger probably does the most serious restaurant business in Denver.
Well, it's interesting when the Ruger, or the Ashram, first started up, everybody said, golly, we got hippies here in Denton. What are we going to do? And then they tried the restaurant and they said, you know, them little hippies sure can't cook good.
Right.
This place was now starving for a good restaurant.
Now they own a whole block.
Yep, they do. They own their entire block. That's not for history to know. Plus, they don't know how to cook it, but I don't know. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the only Italian sauce I've ever tasted in the state of Texas worth the darn was cooked by two men, and because I'm one of them, I'm mentioning me, but the other fellow, just call him Mr. V from New York, is without a doubt the finest Italian chef I know. And I'm a professional bartender, I've been doing it for 11 years, Boston, New York, Miami, Dallas, Houston, Galveston, Mount Snow, Vermont. So I know chefs, I know cooking, Denver, for a lot of years in Denver. And Mr. V knows how to cook a sauce. And Ruger's making hands over foot money, selling a little red sauce on their spaghetti, and everybody likes it. And it's still not even close to real thing.
Seems like.
I just try, what I'm trying to underline here is this club here, not only was it first to open the doors for the student, it instigated a lot of firsts that are now, you know, their techniques, the way they did things. Ruby's came up here to ask how to get their club license. And then they got their club open, okay? The cats from the Mean Green Inn were in here questioning people. Ruger questioned how our menu ran. This place was the novel piece of mild beverage system that hit this town.
When first opened, I was in a good
town. Yeah, I was insulted the first time I came in here because I had to wait 24 hours before I could get a drink. Matter of fact, the guy that's the first door of the kitchen here, we were all insulted because we had to wait 24 hours before we could get our membership. But then we all ended up staying here after all. I ended up here for almost 5 years now, I guess.
The way
that
people ended up getting into the place, they just happened to be around so much that
they just kind of
changed it. So, Tim got hired and he just started working as a bartender.
First thing I did was fix the toilet.
You still fixing them, right? We were just sitting drinking beer one day, and Bill said he needed a new bartender, so there's one here. So he went to work as a bartender, and we had to go back into the place. It's just been a problem with people and a problem with us.
Oh, it's a good idea. Yeah, let's get ourselves.
That is.
That's a good great.
Halfway.
Yeah. The way I got started here, Bill Fitz hired me as a doorman. One night, Bill Fitz hired me as a doorman. Tim fired me at the end of the night. And you know, Tim was talking to me, and I was going, who the hell is this guy? I wasn't even hired by him or anything. And, and then when I was, the next time I was hired, it was by Scotty.
I didn't fire you again.
Well, I was going to say, it sounded like you had a little trouble being appreciated there. It's hard for me to believe a standard fixture like this was ever fired.
Well, yes, that's why I almost started out on his first name.
Tim did it the first night. He was going, I don't need you. But like I was going, how do you know?
Where's Fitz?
And because Fitz was the one that hired me, and Tim fired me, and then Scotty rehired me on a night. He said, "Why don't you fool me?
No,
okay, did you do it?
No.
Yeah, I worked all night. I worked. I wound up working about a week straight every night.
One thing I need to add to the table is the reason then that you quit fixing food here was there just wasn't enough money in it?
It's not really the reason. It's hard to, they say it's hard to get, the clientele here is not really here for food. I'm getting ready to start serving food here again.
Right.
Which will be limited to probably just a little cheese. Can't see this on the tape, but it's a little cheese board. It's a little board, but probably the cheese.
Cheese board.
And I was just going to serve Munster, which isn't but about 32 miles here, makes good cheese, cheddar cheese, in which I was going to start serving that. And probably just a German sausage of some type and some bread. And that's about all I could afford to serve here. Because it doesn't really go over that well anymore. Like I say, when we had the full-on restaurant here, we did good business. We did twice as, or three times as much business as we're doing now today. But the food definitely helps it, but it's hard to keep people in here that run the kitchen. And so you don't really make that much money unless you go in full force. And it's hard to go full force in this place with limited space. People just don't really want to pay the prices. They don't want to really charge the prices that you have to charge.
But, well, the thing that interests me about that is there is a certain business down the street, which I guess shall remain anonymous just in case.
Right.
But they're a fast food place. And they do a great business here about 12 o'clock at night because everybody comes from the final and maybe they think, well, yeah, I had a little bit to drink. I better get some coffee, get something to eat. And they sit down there and wait for the final crowd to get run out. And then they descend on this place for cheeseburgers, sandwiches, coffee, especially coffee. And that's not to say that anyone is really badly snockered. I think maybe one time in the whole time I've been here, I've seen somebody that was really just, zonked.
But, usually try to get rid of it.
Yeah. But,
I go get something to eat when I get off of work, too.
The public is kept up later and out longer, therefore, man eats every for so many hours, he gets this little tendency to be hungry. Days, because I started school here in 64, which is a long time ago now. Is that 12 years ago? And in the old days, before there's any private clubs, we used to once or twice a week do these ridiculous drives 30, 40 miles and get drunk and almost kill ourselves on the highway all over the place. But most of the time, people in town, not that we went to bed earlier or anything, would be at our apartments drinking some beer we bought someplace else, but we would not be out on the street. So there's a benefit to people like in the late night food business from all the bars in town, for sure. There's 1,000 people that are out drinking instead of drinking at home. Instead of putting that bologna sandwich together, they'll stop at Jack and the Crack. One of the delectable delights around here. And, quaff a few little grease burgers and salt them on up.
The biggest clientele here, though, are the people that come in, like the students. They come in after class or have to take a test or something, drink a few beers and sit around and enjoy the conversation. But not give a drink.
One of the best things about this club is that most of our members live within walking distance. As opposed to clubs in different parts of town, there are clubs that are in basically commercial parts of town rather than residential, to where the folks that leave there have to drive. Our members can walk.
We have a walking crowd here.
Yeah. I guess or ride a bicycle or something.
It's because there's no parking.
It's 10 blocks or so.
I live over on Gray Street. I come here all the time because I like the atmosphere. And I always walk on. That's one of the things I like about it. I could not go over to that end of town and join a private club because it'd just be out of all reason. Here I can walk over here and I can walk back. And I can stop off at the fast food place down the thing and get a cheeseburger if I've had a little bit too much.
See, that's the thing about
wouldn't want anybody listening to the tape to think that I've been the noble image of sobriety. But again, I'll say I've never seen anybody in here that was really falling down.
It's back to that big old word behavior again. Now, since this club's been open 5 years, there's never been one person or who worked here or any of the clientele to ever receive a stitch. And like I said, I've worked a lot of bars all across the country, and I'm talking about for Hilton's and so forth. And even in Hilton's, people get a little too drunk, a little too crazy, and somebody decides to punch somebody. Or somebody's begging to be punched, and there's a stitch or a wound or a cut.
This is 71. I guess the grand total of the amount of fights that we've ever had in here is probably three.
And they've never been real fights, you know. It's just been a couple of guys shuffling their feet before they've been anything to help leaps over the bar and grabs everybody.
Thrown out.
We don't hit them with baseball bats.
Yeah, that's one of the best things about this bar is that
we smoke beers.
Totally non-violent. Most everybody gets along. The tables are set up where you have to have if you're going to sit down, then you have to sit down with some other people that you don't really know. You might not really know them, but you have to sit and you usually end up with a conversation. And therefore, you get to know almost everyone in the place knows everyone.
Yeah, they're pretty right next door to the police station, which I'm sure has some effect. But also just, there's never been violence that if anyone appears to get violent, the help just will not break it back.
If they get too violent, we'll kill them. That's a joke.
Yeah.
If someone police starts getting belligerent, yes, the police.
They say take care of yourself.
The police
told us,
yeah,
you know, we don't want to be coming out there.
Yeah, they told us they don't want to take care of our balancers. They want us to take care of our own stuff, and we do, I think, better than probably any other bar in town.
Any bar I've ever worked in. Again,
because
it's safe here, really.
The only reason most of the police know that the final exam exists is that they are told that it's a bar, not that they're getting culpable.
Alec, I imagine you noticed on the way in through the years that there's no sign on this building stipulating that this is where the final exam is.
Right.
We don't advertise.
And there's not one indication that this is a club. You either know where it is or you don't. You've heard about it. So we hear
our greatest advertisement is word of mouth, which seems to have been pretty well. It's going over pretty well.
Well, I got turned on to the place. A couple of friends of mine said, hey, if you can't have the kind of climate you had in Lubbock, Texas, where it went wet and you can walk in any place and get a beer, you got to join a private club. And here's one we think you ought to know about. But I can say, too, non-violent aspect appealed to me right off. Because, you know, here I am 5'8.5" tall, 140 pounds when I'm overweight. If some guy corners me in a bar, I break the rules of Queensbury and run.
Exactly.
But look at the people that
Most of us that work here are the same way.
Yeah.
Look at the people that work here.
That's why we don't like it.
You know, we're
out.
Not exactly Dallas Cowboy rejects or anything like that. Retired football players, but when you get
retired football watchers.
Yeah.
We got too tired to sit in stands.
And we can generally explain to the people that we don't want trauma, and they can go along with that.
Usually they understand it right off the bat. And there's not any loud music. It's not real. It doesn't get real loud here. So you know, like the TV. You're either watching TV or you're gonna listen to the jukebox. I might say that very seldom gets changed the music.
My fault. Well, I've noticed they turn down the sound of Don Kirshner's rock concert on Saturday night and sit there and pump quarters into the juke. So I guess you made some pretty good choices.
Yeah. But, matter of fact, it's a classical jukebox in its own right. It has been. People from, North Texas has a lot of people who are not from Texas because of the business department mainly. A lot of people from the East Coast and the West Coast, and we use some slang terminology called, quote, hip. In other words, they're aware of the society around, you know, to the high degree.
Is this what the old timers would call Yankees?
Yankos. No.
Well, our jukebox, I think our jukebox represents the cross-section we get. We have hard rock, we have country music.
It's a manifestation of the energy.
We have people like Benny Goodman on it.
Masters,
B.B. King,
Bobby Woodland.
Yeah, we've got it from every era.
Yeah,
right.
We're going from Billy Holiday or so up to
Rolling Stones. Sticks, sir.
Right. And you got to realize, again, it was the first college bar in town, and the first people that were associated with the bar, most of them were in liberal arts, most of them were graduate students or teachers. Okay, and the college crowd is more liberal, more relaxed, more humanistic than the downtown New York, Boston, Dallas bar area. And like any given night that somebody gets uptight before and wants to smash somebody, there's probably two or three psychologists sitting around them somewhere. And they won't even hesitate to get in there and start talking the guy down. It's a people-to-people thing.
It works, mate.
The entertainment in this bar is each other. You know, Tim, and even before Tim, all the people that have had a say on this club have not ever been down a lot of entertainment once in a while. Dixieland bands set up out back for a couple hours, or a quiet guitarist come in.
We had a professional piano player and singer that was staying here for quite a while.
Who did he work for? B.B. King?
Renee. She was fairly decent. We tried to have a good happy hour thing where you play piano. She played piano and sang blues mostly, or via whatever she could sing. She went over quite well. And of course, I got rid of the piano, which is a shame.
Well, she went back to Jamaica.
Right.
I noticed one night, and it made the $3 membership worth it for me just one time. I came in, and you had three people at your piano. And the thing that amazed me was that they were all white, because they were doing old-time blues. And they could bend those notes just like a black man.
Oh, well, that's that was me. Those are people from the music department at the college. And that piano had a honky-tonk pedal.
Right. You realize there's some people come in here and drink. They used to go to school here. The main bands, you know, Lou Marino played on the cards to show with blood, sweat, and tears.
People who come in from the 1 o'clock rap band.
Right. The Three Hornmen, Frank Zappa's group.
Because there was a piano there. They went to try out a new number, something they were working on, composing.
Who's that man? Tallwood Gray, Max.
And if they wanted to do a little ragtime,
they used to play the piano. They used to play for Freddie.
And the place would go deathly quiet, like when the Philosophy Club was down here. Pete Gunner and John Miller,
right? Right. John Miller would sing opera. Pete Gunner would sing his ballads.
Pete Gunner sang his songs about the Big Thicket and all, and John Miller. He's got a very soft voice, but it's a beautiful Irish tenor. Sang Danny Boy. And most of these people were a generation removed from that song. But the place, I was working that day, and the place grew deafly quiet.
Right,
it was like, I couldn't even ring anything up on the register. I would have to go around, if someone wanted something, I would just hold up a glass or a bottle, whatever, and I would bring it to them and take their money and whisper that I'll bring you your change as soon as the song is over. Because they didn't want to hear the register clinging around. They didn't want to hear anyone doing anything. And that was one of the busiest afternoons this place has had. And everyone was totally quiet.
And that is so very, very rare. I say this as a musician, amateur musicologist, music freak. That when you can get people together and get just the right chemistry where they communicate and get the crowd to its knees. I don't care whether that's in Carnegie Hall or the final exam, that is a wonderful, very rare experience.
Well, we gave them happy hour prizes because they told us they're bringing the whole philosophy club. It was a benefit for the Big Thicket Fund. Save the Big Thicket. We gave them happy hour prizes all afternoon. From about 2 o'clock on, they raised, they were trying to get a sponsor down here. They figured they would have to take about 5 little things like what they had here to do it. But here they raised over half of what they needed, just on donations. The first time they passed the hat, they picked up over $60. And each time it was like that, people were paying happy hour prices. And what they didn't spend from the regular prices, they were paying that. And the whole front of the place was packed.
missed that.
It's really wonderful. He has a
he
very
can play and
he has
he
a
can
very soft
and
fragile voice.
So it's fragile.
He does have operatic qualities in his tone.
I was amazed to hear him myself, and I walked in here one day and he was just in here with a class, which we do, some of the professors over here hold their classes in here in the summer and during the winter sometimes too. They bring their whole class in here, and they generally have a pretty good rap session or whatever they need to have, with a nice cool atmosphere, which brings them out of the classroom and makes them more,
pool tables we make money off of. We shut down the pool tables in the back before so that like radio, TV, and film classes could come in and talk about a movie. They watch a movie over the here and sit around and talk about it, and they fill up the back room.
Well, I think anyone who's ever sat through a class in a typical college classroom, how nice. He's going to say that's great. Just get out of this into this. From tense to relax. Just sit around and rap about it.
Let's say relax. It's a little more crowded at night than it does in the daytime. But daytime crowd around here is fairly nice. You can enjoy it. If I wouldn't enjoy it, I wouldn't have been here so long. Not only is it a business, but it's also enjoyable some of the time. Some of the time you have your same old hassles, you know, like you do with every business. You get tired of it sometimes, and then, like I was saying earlier, you create your own problems. When you get tired of it, then you make a problem for yourself. But most of the time, it's pretty relaxed.
If I didn't enjoy myself here, I wouldn't be working here still, because I don't need this job.
Most of the people that work here, they would be here anyway if they weren't working, so they might as well be working.
Well, I think that
if I didn't enjoy myself here, I wouldn't be here otherwise working.
Well, that's really something in today's day and age, where we think of people sitting at a desk and nursing their ulcer along and doing the job they hate just to run a place where people enjoy working.
I'm not saying I don't have ulcer tendencies for running this place, but there is a lot of hassles that are everyday hassles for some people, but it's new to me. I'm still learning. It's a learning process for me, just running this place.
I think just to have a place where it's enjoyable for people to work makes the hassle easier. Makes earning a buck a lot more fun.
Right, I wish they could earn more bucks.
One thing I've been meaning to ask, and I guess this group of people shall go under the anonymous collective name of Drives, but as long as I've lived in Denton, I grew up here. I spent 7 years in West Texas, then came back. Well, the place was dry, it's legally dry since 1902. And I remember as long as I've lived, we'd walk down neighborhood street, all the place was legally dry, but you know, you'd see a few beer cans, wine bottles, a few skid marks by the wine bottle, roll up and see a whiskey bottle in somebody's hand. Place has been very, very wet all that time, but the idea of whether liquor will be legally sold on a certain part of a city is almost an hysterical issue in this part of the world.
Very true. You read it in the paper every day. There's almost an article ever since that. Before the election that made it go wet, and even after the election, you can almost read something about it in the paper almost every day. As long as it's been dry, it's been, it might as well have been wet. Well, it's been, since the first places that opened up were 10, 15 miles from here. Before that, you had to drive 30 or 35 miles to get here. So people did that anyway. They probably bought more, you know, so they could have more on hand. And then you had your problems with bootleggers back. But in this case, I'm sure it didn't have quite a problem with the place. And the places got closer, 10 miles, 15 miles out of town. And it made it a little bit easier to get food. Now, since I'm going away, I'm anxious to see just what does happen.
Yes, very interesting, I think.
I think it might even calm down sometimes. You know, it might not be as bad as the way that everybody brings it up to be. It's the way they think it might be. It seems to me like it would make it better. See whether it would hurt the private club. I could say my business, whether it hurt it or not. I don't think that the prices that I charge for membership here is really outrageous it's just paying for the atmosphere, is all you're doing. But you gotta meet the state requirements and the city requirements, which I don't mind doing, as long as it's not a great limit, but it's not overbearing. I'm a small businessman, which this place is a small business. A lot of small businesses, all they do is create jobs. That's one of the main things that they create jobs for maybe 6, 8, 10 people. They would be looking for another job somewhere else in town that doesn't pay. And they might say that I'll pay probably better than most people do in regular business.
Waitstaff's a great book.
What?
I'm going to be fascinated playing back the tape saying what that sounds like. But I'm wondering if I'm not putting you on the spot or it wouldn't infringe into anything that would be libelous. Have you had much hassle from the drawings?
Right.
I don't even
voted Ryan on
directly. I don't have any hassle from them at all. Directly as I can see, they might, like I say, this place it has no signs, it has no flashing lights or anything. Most people drive by here, they think it's a fraternity house or somebody has a party here all the time because they see all the cars in here. I imagine most people around doesn't really know where this place is. They know it's on the corner of Avenue C and Hickory, but they don't really know. They can't really tell where it's at. It's not that loud, so they can't really.
No, we haven't had that much hassle.
The dry people.
This place has a club. When the election was going on, before the election, all the campaign ad and stuff on either side. I know I got a phone call from a woman who sounded like she was in her 50s or 60s, and was telling me the evils of alcohol, that if alcohol got into dinner, how the community would fall apart. And I could have told her that I worked in a bar, gone into a little counter tirade against it. All I said was, well, I never thought about it that way. And it seemed to satisfy her.
Probably a very wise move.
Right, well, I mean, the girl that I used to live next door had the same problem during one of the elections or when they were having a petition for to vote wet. She had a phone call from a lady, almost the same. Quite hassled her quite a bit, about the evils of drinking and what it was going to do to Denton, but she didn't particularly like the phone call that much. It didn't seem right that someone was going to call you and tell you, that your life was going to be in danger because somebody's going to have a drink. Everybody, I'm not sure that everyone in this town that says that they're going to vote dry and all that doesn't drink it. They might hide it at home, or they might hide it.
Remember the closet club?
Right.
How about that old lady that...
Well, Mrs. Fadlin,
ran into the front of the building.
I'll say she's an ex, I believe she, I don't know if it's English. She's a professor here. A lady lives down the street. She drops by. Occasionally she drops by and she'll come in and walk around, look around here. And she's quite pleased in the way that this place has been since she even the other day we were sitting out front and she complimented me on how the place was run, because people have asked her before since she lives less than a block from here.
Oh,
how
old lady?
Yeah, she must be in her late 60s.
Oh, yeah, she's come in and she's looked around and complimented us on our glasses.
She's been coming in since the day it opened. She'd come in here.
The people that have asked her anyway, she has quite a bit to say about it hasn't caused any hassles. It hasn't hasn't changed her life any. And she's quite pleased with it. Like I say, she comes around and she enjoys seeing what's here.
Yeah, and she never drinks it.
She doesn't drink.
Doesn't drink a drop. Just will come in and see how the place is doing.
I believe she's quite.
Yeah.
Like I say, she complimented Bobby and I was standing out there the other day, and she. I always say hello. She knows who I am. She likes the flowers and the plant and stuff. Whatever we do, try to keep it this way.
I think that's great. One thing that I did want to stress for the tape was that the final exam has not been a bad influence on me.
Matter of fact, if you look at it from a broad sense, it's brought a great reduction in problems in society and clubs in general like the final, because people aren't out on the highway. Now, I went to college here 64, 5, 67, those years. Every damn week in the campus paper, you'd read about a fellow student or two students or four students who were killed on the highway coming back to Fort Worth, Dallas, or Oklahoma. So just the safety factor, because people drive their cars when they've been out drinking and they don't have to drive very well. That's already helped the community right there without getting any.
Yeah, and there's been at least one club closed down just for the number of fights that they had. The police said, "We don't want to put up with it anymore. Put up with your bullshit." And at the final, we don't have it's a very relaxed atmosphere. If someone starts acting belligerent, he doesn't want to do it.
Hi, how are you?
Dr. Hughes.
Aspirin, yes.
We're on tape right now. Say a few words at the time.
How are you?
We don't. I think.
Much better.
Well, a bar in Dallas could not compare to this place. It's
just
They have. They have a bouncer who is prepared to fight anyone for any reason. Bouncers here generally go, "Well, if that's the way you want to act, then you know, you think you're bigger than me and can take me, great. And you think you can take the police department." And they generally realize that no, they can't. So
nobody here is here
to
correspond to fighting back.
Yeah, as soon as someone gets belligerent, we can threaten them with the city.
We don't
even and
have
they
to
have
that.
To back off. Yeah, well that's happened. That happened once when I was a doorman. And that was in a year. One
I can
guy
only
got
one
belligerent.
Call the cops for one man.
And
once
I said,
I called him one time.
Oh, you did?
I called him one
you know,
time.
I know you can beat me up, but can you beat up the Denton Police Department?
I called the police
and he said no and left.
When one guy refused to leave and rather than hassle with him, which would have been probably just a hassle. Rather than hassle with him, I just called the police. And they came to the front door and they knocked. They're pretty good about it. The guy was screaming at me at the same time. And it was sitting right next to the front door, and he's the buffalo. And the guy was sitting there screaming at me and cursing at me and calling me names and everything. And I was just sitting there looking at him. And the policeman standing there right behind the door, laughing at him. I just and he asked him to leave, and he said he wasn't going to leave, so I just opened the door and asked the policeman to come through. Came in and asked the guy to come out. I didn't press charges against him, which I don't really ever want to do, unless I had to. And then I had a nice little talk with the guy, and the guy didn't come back in here, which was the main idea. Once you have a problem with someone in here, I generally just ask them to leave and not to ever come back.
In fact, the laws against the rules around here, because not written laws, but the rules around here about trying to be the beast of the attitudes about bar B and so forth. There was an employee here, I don't want to mention his name, who once got in a lightweight scuffle. He was hurt or really hit, I think somebody rolled around the front lawn for a minute. Got a 30-day suspension from drinking in a club, even though he worked here. And the poor fellow had to work in the kitchen. He wasn't allowed to go out in the bar and drink for 30 days. But that's a fact. I've never seen that run down where, in other words, humanistic enough to keep the employee and not fire him from his job, at the same time punish the man and say, look, wasn't serious, but don't ever do it again. There's your one time, 30 days on drinking.
I think one of the things I like about the private club situation, and since it went wet, that it will create some jobs that will have to raise the general standard of wage in Denver. Standard of wage in Denver is pretty low, and there's not that many jobs, but it does create some jobs, and maybe even just raise the standard a little bit in the wage. I know in Denver, most people pay way below what they're supposed to, because they don't have to have, they have under 10 employees, and such, they don't have to pay even the minimum wage. So wages in Denver, I don't mind saying I pay fairly good wages.
Dare we do. A waitress here makes the best money that she can get in town.
Hourly wage,
not counting
tips. She doesn't make very many tips.
Well, if you consider what the other clubs have on tips, it's they get all their tips up to a certain amount, and then the bartender gets in. From what they get out of the tables here, the waitress keeps all she gets at the tables, and she splits the tips with the bartender that goes into the tip jar on the bar.
I'll tell you what's
done. So the waitresses here have the best deal in town.
In 1965, Alec, there used to be a burger chef where now we have a art building. So, okay, there used to be a burger chef or Burger King, one of those fast food places. And I work my way through school, like almost all the employees here work their way through college. They're not paying predominantly well, family, to say the least. And at that burger chef, I was paid 90 cents an hour. I worked there 3 months and got a raise to $1.10 an hour. I had as much knowledge. I've worked in big hotels and New England Inns and all this. That was the best job and only job I could find in Denver. When I worked here, I used to make about $125 a week. And, a few fringe benefits.
Most of the waitresses here make over twice on hourly wage. They make over twice of what would at another club.
Matter of fact, my waitresses, I work with waitresses at the Hilton, the most prestigious bar in downtown Dallas. Their hourly wage is $1.26 an hour, and they just got a raise from $1 an hour. About 3 months ago, they were paying $1 an hour. And here, the girl, when they start $2 an hour, and most of them get a little incremental raises as time goes on. If you stay in the club, Tim makes sure that they get a little extra dime an hour here, an extra quarter an hour here. Some of the girls, they've worked up to about $2.50.
Yeah, that's their hourly wage. Plus, they get the best break on tips anywhere in the city.
Would you like to bring a waitress in on this conversation?
All right.
Oh, here's one here.
Colleen, come here. Come here, sir.
She's went back from Mexico.
Colleen, come here.
What's up, dude? makes no difference. Okay,
so you don't want to answer the man's question. She's too busy right now, sure.
I just thought she ought to have a chance if you want to get some words in. But I'm sure you don't want to get any words in.
Take care of her.
I'll talk later. We have to
wear I guess that about wraps up my questions, and I've got what I think is an excellent take. Do you all have any extra things you'd like to throw out? Anything we haven't covered? Anything you'd like to say?
One other thing.
Let me ask you, Alec.
One at a time.
I got there first. One thing I want to make a comment about, large in general, especially the large, is more for the people than just for the bottom line. It's one of the greatest socialization processes that people can go through between the ages of 18 or 22 or 23 to help prepare them for the real world. And if it hadn't been for these type of places, the kids, when they get out on the streets and become teachers, school teachers, whatever in society, until private clubs opened in this town, they were 4 or 5 years behind the rest of the people that they dealt with. In other words, regular business people, secretaries and such, right? Because the difference in the old days was no drinking, which meant no socialization on a grand scale. Everybody had private parties in their apartments. And now they deal with society in an open situation where you get a big cross section, and therefore it makes them more socialized to the real world when they leave Denver. That's it.
One point I could bring up as a scholar of English history, the English pub is very much a social institution. It's not just a bar where everybody goes for a drink. It's a neighborhood institution.
And this is much like it to what you're talking about. Go ahead.
I was just going to say a noted English politician named William Gladstone once hurt his party tremendously by trying to impose temperance on the English people.
Yeah.
Not because they were drunkards, but because he was attacking their social institutions. The place where they got together with a guy down the street and having a grand social, and they didn't like it.
Yes, Gladstone was in on the fear of gin, as opposed to fear.
There's been more knowledge exchanged in this bar than knowledge exchanged in dormitory study halls at the library. That's the fact. As many times I've sat here and overheard two people taking biology, and when a biology lab instructor come in the bar for beer and sit down and talk to them, and it's like a private tutoring in a social situation as opposed to the academic, pristine, cold, synthesized world. And when you're in a state of reinforcement, knowledge is imprinted much deeper in consciousness than in that sterile world. And this bar has helped me study more than all the times I've read.
I've learned 3 times as much as I guess I learned in college, just because I've got a general education from different people that are in different departments in this college.
Scotty, how many times have you and I argued over human consciousness and man's relation to the universe?
Right, and how much have you taught me about the novel and aspects of English which I'm very interested in? I've had professors tell me the same things and made very good grades in the class because I came back and parroted what they told me, but I didn't understand the essence of the meaning.
He says man in fluent freshman English, man tags.
No, 6 times. I passed it on the 7th round. That's that. But I do have my degree. And I minored in English after all those favors. But part of all my knowledge that I ever put back down in term paper, a great deal of it came out of rhetoric that was exchanged in school. And that's important. I can't remember the name of the great professor from, I think, Oxford. He died not too long ago. Bertrand Russell, wasn't it?
No. Russell wasn't in Oxford. He was a philosopher.
From what school over there? Name of it. And he used to take the students. Who was the one who took the students down to the bar?
He was an American.
Who was the one who took the students down to the bar in England? Come on, D.K. This is your Jeffrey question.
At the bar?
Take them down to the bar and discuss with them. From Oxford, Cambridge.
C.P. Stone.
No. Well,
he used to do that.
This is some, you'll have to look this up in another section of the library.
Which goes on.
We invent words here like audiomatic, which you know, there are people who have what they used to call photographic memories. You know, they read something, they remember everything they read and print. There are other people who remember everything they hear. They're audiomatics. Nobody ever thought that until they came to the final. Now you also have a word called a mobility quotient. What is that? It's not transportation of product. What it is, the farther away from the sea that you're going to sell a shrimp, the bigger the price that you can sell your shrimp for. And the deeper you buy your shrimp into the ocean, the cheaper your shrimp's cost. That's a mobility factor. They don't have that mobility at the moment.
No, we had also... Well, you and I came up with the term audiomedic. You also had what was it? Psychomedic? Remember everything you think?
Yep, one of those.
I think I should get Uncle Benny back. He lived in this house before it ever became important.
It's okay with him. I'll be glad.
Let me, you go get him. I'll get him.
DH, you were talking about having something to say.
Uncle Benny!
You were trying to get out.
Oh,
Scotty.
Well, Scotty pretty much said it, that this bar is a social experience that Denton needs, and that we were dealing with basically a middle class, lower middle class, and lower class environment here. There are not too many people in the true upper class in Denton.
Benny, come over here and have a chat.
The educational system, primary and secondary educational system, is a shambles. This bar exposes people to people from different parts of the state, some of these people that come here have never seen anyone from West Texas or anything like that. It also exposes them to people from other countries. We have a couple of Englishmen that come in regularly, an Australian, people from the Far East, or even South America. We get a cross view of the society that is in Denton. We do get, I think, a true cross section to where it is not only the resident population and the student population, but even among like the student population, we get a cross section. There are many foreign students.
Where? Like the English pub again?
Yes.
Social center.
We try and this place operates basically as a microcosm.
This is Benny Griffith.
Benny Griffith?
He lived in this house, Alex.
This house before it was the final exam.
Maybe it was his initial idea. He mentioned to someone else that he ended up starting a private service.
Well, what I'm doing here is an oral history program for the public library. And I'm working on local history and local business history by coming over here and talking to these gentlemen. I just wondered if you'd like to know if you want to tell my tapes.
I saw you have both the other day. Shaking the arm and it's fantastic. And you know what happened? I don't know the stack. It's going to be our
real adult. Well, I kind of all snorted one day. We were wondering why we couldn't start selling a little beer on the cuff, for students. Of course, we found out that was highly illegal, so it's a process of becoming legitimized, and that was a license for the private body. We were thinking about where the private property. Okay. Well, I said I've been in Oak Cliff. There's been private clubs over there, much like the place here in the old houses of private clubs and residential. As long as it moves across this. This, of course, was the new club in the church. So we decided, well, how about this place?
I got so we looked at it. I'm all ready to go, but I'm not going to do anything.
A few people look at it. Wouldn't be a bad stand. Let's put something together last. And next thing I knew, I was being asked to move.
We're going to put a toilet where you used to sleep, Danny. You got to move. Oh!
Let me see.
get one pair of slacks and try to get to James Case tomorrow to find his hand.
And, which I was ready to do because the winter breeze was about to blow me away. Since the windows were shut around the shore, there was a lot of air moving out. I was ready to go. Never ready to miss a flight. That's all she wrote.
But to this day, he still doesn't understand how it went through.
No, I was initially suggesting that this house was similar to those who had made private flips in other areas of the book. I hadn't really believed at all. Never believed this place. Because I believe, for one thing, get license. And I never believed in an area where they could be zoned. So, no, I'm very skeptical. And I'm very surprised when we opened the doors and let everybody in.
One of the longest shots ever pulled off.
It was a long shot. There's no doubt about it. It was held up. It went through a lot of grist before the mill turned out the product. I guess there was a lot of grease applied to the wheels. I'm sure there was. There were certain areas. Nevertheless, it didn't occur to me at the time as possible. But I knew there was too much pressure to stem any local private clubs. The private clubs out when I was in be right here at the closest camp. That was something that was inconceivable to me at the time. So even though it was my thought, it was still passing on as bullshit. Crazy. Here I am, man. Contributing my money to this.
You're paying for your thoughts, man. They're charging you for your thinking.
Well, I guess that about wraps up my comments again. Can I get any more vibes from y'all? Anything else you think I'll be on the table?
I really don't have that.
AH?
He could talk all day if you let him,
but he won't say much.
He'll say a lot, but he won't say much.
Well, if that's it, I'll put the thing off and find another beer.
It's been very nice.
I just hope everybody listens to this in the future, remembers what it felt like. I know you can't, but we do. Thank you. We feel good.
It's all we're getting up.
He's not going to have a damn thing down there, but background noise.